This is the podcast for September 2nd, 2011. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the heat death of Dick Cheney's alternate reality, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal. So how's it going this week, Blue Gal?
Well, we have a runner-up for the winner of the internet this week.
You do, eh?
Yeah, Some E-Cards is the runner-up. And they said, they were talking about Dick Cheney's memoir. I'm paraphrasing here. Dick Cheney's memoir is a reminder of the golden age, when we believed Republicans couldn't get more terrifying than Dick Cheney.
Oh, those innocent times. I remember them well. Yes, I do. Which makes me different than most Republicans. And yes, I actually remember yesterday and the day before really, really well.
But we have a winner. We have a winner. Our own listener. Facebook friend of the podcast, Jennifer. Jennifer from Texas.
As much as
I've mocked
and despised Facebook as a fad that the kids will eventually grow tired of, eventually, I guess it actually has paid off.
It has paid off big time for us, and we love our Facebook listeners. They're very cool people. Yeah, I think people finally figured out that Facebook could be used as Twitter Plus, and that's awesome. I mean, it really is. It can be a really good tool. But Jennifer, our listener Jennifer, went to the MoveOn.org and other organizations' protest of Mitch McConnell in San Antonio, Texas. She went to the protest, walked the streets with a big bright pink sign, and she taped an actual U.S. dollar on the sign. And said, "This is more than ExxonMobil paid in Texas. Do you think that's fair?"
Way to go.
Fabulous. It was just fabulous.
Rob, this is me. Clap, clap, yeah. Clap. Internet clap.
And then she posted it to our Facebook page. So that is doubly awesome. So thank you, Jennifer. You rock.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Yeah, we loved it.
We need a million more like you, Jennifer.
We do. And thank you so much. I want to talk tonight. I'm going to do a lot of talking tonight.
I'm just going to lay back and take
it,
Blue Gal.
You're going to tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong, Blue Gal. You're wrong.
There you go.
As only a chick can be wrong. You're wrong, Blue Gal.
Oh, man. I saw a bumper sticker tonight on a pickup truck. Of course it was on a pickup truck that said, "Dip me in butter and throw me to the lesbians." And I said, yeah, the lesbians would look at you and go, ick, and walk away. Dude, don't you understand that lesbians have better things to do?
Look, Al, it's not about real lesbians.
You're right. It's the fake imaginary hot lesbians in his head.
That's right. Marshmallow lesbians. The fluffy bunny marshmallow lesbians in my mind.
He has no idea.
Yeah.
As someone who has been hit upon by real lesbians...
As both of us have, Blue Gal.
It's much more of a flattering thing when the person is intelligent and has some political principles than is just a hot Playboy bunny version of what you think a lesbian is. Yeah.
And that bumper sticker is the opposite of a saying I heard many, many, many long years ago, probably in a Robert Heinlein book.
Mm-hmm. Everybody take a drink.
That's where I hear everything. the motto was, "If captured, never let them give you to the women."
Yeah, there you go. See?
Because the men will just kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah, women are much more subtle than that.
Yes, they are. A woman like that was the one who actually wrote Dick Cheney's memoir. Liz.
Yeah. Liz.
I wouldn't want to be handed over to Liz, you know?
There's a father knows best household.
Oh, my God.
You don't hear much from their lesbian daughter, do you?
No. Speaking of which, yeah.
No.
Anyway, we got a letter last week. We didn't have time to talk about it, but I wanted to bring it up. And it relates to so many other issues that I have swirling around in my head this week that the tentative title for this podcast, which is not going to make it, but I have written on our notes, "Sticking to Principles or Liberal Purity Fetish." And it's just something that I've been thinking a lot about this week. Well, it first came up with Hurricane Irene.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there was no plan for evacuating the prisoners on Rikers Island.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of outrage on Twitter about that. And I thought, yeah, that's great. But, you know, it's not like we have the political will or the budgets anywhere to have an extra prison
mm-hmm.
with 12,000 spaces in it. You know, so if we're going to be outraged about that, we need to sort of come up with some practical solution. And I'm not saying that it isn't horrible that New York State and New York City doesn't have a plan for something like this, but there isn't going to be an extra prison lying around. But then I heard that the U.S. taxpayers spent $40 million on a prison in Iraq that Iraq didn't want and sitting there unfinished. Uh-huh. It's an unfinished prison. $40 million U.S. taxpayer funded prison in Iraq.
Probably hurricane-proof, Blue Gal.
Probably hurricane. Probably not affected by hurricanes. Safe from hurricanes.
At least hurricane-resistant.
Honestly. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes we liberals get so busy pushing for a perfect world that we miss the fact that if we want to push for that, we're responsible for the steps we have to take to get there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in a perfect world, 12,000 people from upstate would each take a prisoner into their home and serve them Stouffer's. And, you know, it would be lovely.
No.
But,
no.
You know,
That's not my perfect world, by the way.
Well, we have to have, you know, if you want a plan, tell me what the plan is. Mm-hmm. You know, but as John Lennon said, you know.
If you want to go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao,
you know, that's not it. That's not how it's, you know, we all want to change the world, but how?
Mm-hmm. Well, and what are you willing to trade off?
Right. Right. Well, so this letter, we got a letter from this wonderful, it's a wonderful letter. And this lady is obviously just rocking. She's, her name is Judy. She's from Vermont. And she writes, I'm only going to read a part of her letter, but she writes, I am a 73-year-old woman who still works full time at Vermont's largest hospital. The way my pension is going, I almost expect to get a bill in the mail that I owe them.
We love you, Judy.
Vermont. We really do. And she sent a beautiful card, too, a wedding card as well as a contribution. And we thank you for that, too. Driftglass has spoken often about how someone you vote for will break your heart. Well, Bernie Sanders has broken my heart. He will go down in history for all the things he has fought for, but no one is writing about him wanting Lockheed Martin in Burlington. Along with Pat Leahy, no surprise, Peter Welch, no surprise, and Governor Peter Shumlin, among others. I had attended a meeting that he held in our Capitol with Tom Hartman, Ben and Jerry, and other speakers regarding corporations and their evil plans. It lasted about 2.5 hours, and then it was put out for people to ask questions, which many did. One man got up to speak, not ask a question, but to make a comment regarding Lockheed Martin. At their mention, Bernie jumped up from his seat with his fist in the air and stated that having them was a good thing, and they would help us go green and pay high salaries, and that's all they would do. My jaw fell to the floor. As I looked around, so was everyone else's. I think everyone just froze. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, what have you just been talking about for the last 2.5 hours? With that, I left. I wanted to cry and scream out. I just couldn't digest what he said. And I went and looked, you know, not distrusting what Judy was saying about her experience with this meeting, but I went and looked up some blogs that were talking about it. And yes, indeed, Sanders has labeled Lockheed Martin in the past as a repeat offender that rarely faces serious penalties. It's absurd that year after year after year, these companies continue to do the same things and they continue to get away with it. Yet he and the mayor of Burlington have both invited Lockheed Martin to Vermont. For 2 years, Sanders has been working with local energy companies and the University of Vermont to bring a satellite of the Lockheed subsidiary Sandia Laboratories to the state, while simultaneously welcoming the prospect that Lockheed-built F-35s might be bedded at the Burlington International Airport. As Sanders has put it, if F-35s are going to be built and deployed, he prefers to see the work done by Vermonters. Mm-hmm. Sandia, apparently, is a energy kind
consortium.
Energy security, energy grid designing kind of company. Mm-hmm. Can very much be seen as kind of a green energy, if you want to talk about it that way. I can see Lockheed Martin trying to get Bernie Sanders on their side and saying, look, we're going to give you this. You know, we're going to give you these really good paying jobs, a subsidiary of ours that's doing the kind of things that University of Vermont wants to do. And I'm not making excuses for Bernie Sanders, but I can see why Lockheed Martin might try to woo him with this kind of deal.
Yeah.
And why he might take it. Not that it doesn't break everybody's heart, but, mm-hmm. you know, I can see how this might come about. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and Bernie Sanders also famously took the deal with Barack Obama over healthcare, I think.
Yeah, well, he wanted taxes. The Sanders centers. Yeah.
He used them to open health centers
health
in
centers.
His state.
Everywhere. No, they're going to be nationwide. Yeah.
Well, I think he took that money for his state to get them started there, if I understand correctly.
Yeah,
I might
now Vermont is going to have single payer, you know, mm-hmm. and that's amazing.
So, yes, he shook hands with the devil with his eyes open because he thought the net effect of the deal was a net positive for his constituents.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can't really fault a politician. I can fault a saint for doing that or – I can fault, a civil rights leader, or someone who's really, you know, I've worked with people like that. I was married to a very fine person like that who is an advocate. Who anything less than 100% of what I asked is treason.
Well, and she not to get too personal about what she did, but I think it's safe to say she was a lobbyist for poor people. I mean, she was out there to lobby on behalf of people.
Who were getting screwed.
Right.
Who had no advocacy, who were starving, who were, you know, being screwed out of their
and not an elective official, not trying to broker deals. She was there to fight for a constituency of poor people. Damn.
Poor people, hungry people, you name it.
Period. Yep.
Exactly. And that's, you know, hey, this I tend to hang with the liberal ladies. What can I say? It's a long-standing habit of mine. And she's a very fine person. But the point being that in an advocate, in the role of advocacy, you know, your job is not to see the side of the other side.
Right.
Your job is to fight like hell for your side.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point you have to become or the process goes into the hands of a jury or a judge or legislators who have to figure out if you should get everything you asked for, nothing you asked for, some of what you asked for, or in the hands of people who are going to try to broker a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And those people are inevitably going to sell some of what you love in exchange for some of what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to feel screwed and dirty. I'm reminded of the story, and I don't know if it's apocryphal or not. I think it's true. Is how Huey Long got hospitals for African Americans in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
The African Americans, of course, were, you know, Huey Long is a famous American politician who was well on his way to becoming our first straight-up demagogue president, governor of Louisiana and senator. Powerful, powerful man in Louisiana. Go see All the King's Men, is it? There's a bunch of documentaries about him. And he was, you know, every man a king. He was a populist, old school, rile them up, throw the bums out kind of, you know. He'd be right at home running right alongside Rick Perry these days.
Yep.
And Huey Long promised to get a hospital for black people in Louisiana who were obviously getting screwed. And he said, you're not going to like the way I'm going to do this, but I'll do it for you. I'll get it done. And the way he did it was to go to the white people and said, you poor, poor white people, how is it you're being forced to share hospital space with those Negroes?
Mm-hmm.
Why, I'll get them out of your hair. I'll get them away from your pure white women. I'll build a whole separate facility way on the other side of town. And that way you'll be safe from the scary, scary brown people.
Wow.
And he appealed directly to their racism.
Yep. Unapologetically.
Unapologetically, he pandered right to it. And he got the hospital built. Harry Truman had the same problem when he was known as the senator from Prendergast. Before that, he was a state commissioner. A state judge, I think. I forget the title exactly, but he had a lot of power and he paved roads and shit. And he really wanted to get, you know, work done for his constituents. And the price of getting that done was putting some of Boss Prendergast people on the payroll who shouldn't have been on the payroll and looking the other way as they ripped the public off.
Yep.
And believe me, I live in Chicago, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which is the bluest of blue cities. But you scratch the surface and you find a very deeply, culturally, genetically corrupted organization that's been rotten, you know, going back to before to Big Bill Thompson, the last Republican mayor, to Prohibition, to Al Capone. But if you want your garbage picked up, there are certain people you have to deal with.
Yep.
You might not like it, but that's the way the world works. And finding a place in that, you know, straddling the world of advocacy and idealism and pragmatism and realism and not forgetting which direction you're traveling.
Yeah, I guess the thing that really frightens me, though, is we're in a time of worldwide economic depression.
Yes.
And that is always the time when the polluters come out and say, we can create jobs for you if you'll only let the air get a little dirtier. And, you know, this tar sands thing is going down, and it's scary to me that economic fear is trumping the environment.
Well, this is
once again, you know.
Not to rip off even more movies from the American classic genre, from the American classic collection, but this is The Run on the Bank from It's a Wonderful Life.
Yep.
And Potter's not selling, Potter's buying.
Yeah.
You know, the polluters are playing on our fear and our desperation and our need for jobs. And God knows, ever since we got our asses kicked out of Eden, you know, by the sweat of our brow shall we make our daily bread. You know, we have to work. We work. It defines to a disturbing degree who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just food on the table. I know that my identity in very various periods of my life has been defined by my job.
Yeah.
And losing that job is emotionally, psychologically crippling, as well as economically devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Multiply that by millions. Multiply that by millions over years. And that's where we're at now. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. And it's worldwide. So at that time, the predators come out, and they have lots of money. They have deep pockets. And they're willing to you know, give you a little bit of what you want just in exchange for your immortal soul.
Mm-hmm.
And in exchange for things you can never get back. We can never get back our environment.
Yeah.
You know, once it's screwed for a century, for two or for three, you know, forever. You know, the question you raise is one of those koans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Those it doesn't have an answer.
Yeah.
It's how you struggle with the question that defines you.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, where is that place where you can find a comfortable balance between your idealism and not losing that and your realism?
Well, and we're perfect. That's the perfect way you just said that. Realism versus, you know, identity and realism. I was reading an article on Daily Coast today that was actually a cartoon about zip houses, and it was making fun of the whole zip car movement where you can actually pick up a car on the street and rent it for an hour or two and then park it someplace else, and people just have this kind of borrowing around the city of these little cars. And Slowpoke, Jen Sorensen, did one called Zip Homes, a hearth when you want one, because people are living in a pup tent on the street, you know. But wait, we need to have a birthday party. So you just make a reservation and zip your credit card at the door, and we'll put pictures of your family on the mantle. Just make sure you take them when you leave. And, you know, by the hour, you can have a house with a flush toilet, you know. And it's funny, but it's, you know, it's funny because it's gallows humor, right?
Right.
But the conversation.
By the way, Bluegill, we call those nap rates at local.
Yeah, exactly. And there's some jokes about that in here of, you used to rent a hotel to have sex, and now it's to really have a shower, you know, because you're living on the street. What the conversation in the comment thread for this article turned into, it seemed to me, was, you know, a talk about, oh, back in the day, my parents could buy a house for $10,000 in 1961, and I bought a house in 1971 for this amazingly low amount of money. And no one's talking in real 2011 dollars here, at all. Nothing's, for the most part, nothing. Some of it's adjusted, but most of it's not. But then conversations, a lot of people saying, well, you know, one commenter says, my 20-something son, his wife, and their son live in my basement. we can't afford, they can't afford rent, let alone to buy, and they can't get a job, and so on. But a couple of us, one woman named Prairie Gal, she and I are clearly interchangeable.
No, you're not.
But she lives, she and I made exactly the same point. She made the point of, look, if you're willing to live in Western Iowa, you can get a gorgeous house for $72,000. Now,
yep.
Warning you, Steve King will be your congressman. You're going to have to deal with some Republicans, and you're not going to be in Southern California. And that's what I said. I was looking up statistics because I knew there were statistics about how many people live 60 miles from any coast in the United States. And it's gotten up to 53%.
Does that count the Great Lakes
that,
as well?
That counts – no, but that counts the Gulf of Mexico. That counts. Houston.
All right.
53% of Americans live 60 miles or less from salt water.
Mm-hmm.
And 6% of those people live in Los Angeles County, just the county.
Yeah.
And that's just unsustainable. I mean, if you're going to talk about housing prices and you're talking about minimum wage employees in Los Angeles County, you know, they're driving 200 miles to get to work because they can't afford to live there.
Well,
and so, well, and I made, here's the point that I made it in comments, because I left a rather long comment, but, and I rewrote it a couple times before I posted it because I didn't want to sound preachy.
I didn't want to say,
yo, you California a-holes, move to the Midwest. That was not my point. My point is that I expect we will see a great migration to the center of the country sooner rather than later, because retirees are going to realize they don't need to live in California, and people who have stayed in Michigan are going back to the land in organic farming and sustainable living that matches anything happening in California. Those guys are – Susie Bright had gone to Detroit. Remember her stories about Detroit?
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, those people are – pioneers. I think that's the word to use. You know, these are the guys who stayed after the bomb went off, literally. You know, there are no police. There aren't, you know, there's nothing except if you hear a car alarm go off, everybody runs out into the street and checks on it because they have that tight a community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I just pointed out that in, you know, in the region where I live, there you can get a nice house for $125,000, and that's not Iowa prices, but it's a little more. And I never have to drive more than 10 minutes to get anywhere. We've got, and then I have to add, you know, gagging all the way, we have Walmart, we have Target, we have Barnes & Noble, we have tons of pharmacies, we have two good hospitals, we have Amtrak to Chicago in 3 hours, high-speed internet, and you know what? The banks here even allow direct deposit of Social Security checks.
Wow. And you just went all Chamber of Commerce on me there, Blue Gal.
But, you know, people are going – here's the deal with – there's a chart up at Tumblr Politics talking about distribution of wealth. When you talk about poor people right now, you're talking about 60% of the United States population. You know, the distribution of wealth in this country has just gone completely nuts.
Yes, starting with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. And
I mean, that's where the bifurcation began. There's no way around the fact that 30 years of Republican politics has produced a near feudal state of extraordinary concentration of wealth at the top, not kind of, you know, rich people and the guy with the biggest, you know, house in town.
No.
Those days are over.
Yep.
We're talking about a different species of human that doesn't exist on the same plane of existence as you or I.
Yep.
And then an assload of permanently poor people who are stuck, you know, in a dead end place that there's no way out of.
Right.
And
the rest of my comment, it's not much more, is sooner rather than later, those working minimum wage jobs to live in L.A. County will realize that they're actually minimum wage jobs with no benefits in Ohio, too. You know, and that's really sad to say, but that's what people got. You know, that's what we've got. And if Ma Jode could make it to California, then her great-grandchildren can make it back to southern Indiana. Mm-hmm. Quality of life on minimum wage with much lower housing costs is better. And mm-hmm. poor people are going to take the reins and move to flyover country to save themselves. I hope the Midwest is ready for it.
Well,
and you know,
I would agree to this extent. I think that's you're going to see a reverse migration from the coasts inland.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're going to see the people moving towards the cities.
Well, but LA County is a city.
Yeah,
well, I mean, no, you're not, but what I mean, there's so such sprawl that that's not going to be.
What I mean is, I would not be surprised, and I've seen lots of studies to this effect, that in the next 20 to 50 years, mm-hmm. you're going to see a massive increase in the number of people who live in urban centers.
Yeah, yeah.
Traditional urban centers, because of energy price and carbon price mm-hmm. and the efficient distribution of food and services are all just better done in cities. Things are, the cost of overall cost of dealing with large numbers of people mm-hmm. is just cheaper and more efficient in cities than it is in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Just is.
Yeah.
Now, add to that, $7 a gallon gas.
Well, yeah. And there are some cities that have done it a lot better, the car-free lifestyle, a lot mm-hmm. better than others. LA County is not a place that's done the car-free lifestyle well.
No.
And that's another problem. But, What I kept thinking about this afternoon after I wrote that comment is, yes, we could all sit around as liberals and wait until someone passes a living wage law in LA County, in Southern California. Yeah. And the deal is, we can't get paid sick days passed in fucking Vermont.
Right.
You know, I'm assuming the Lockheed Martin Green Energy subsidiary is going to have some benefits with those jobs. And maybe that's something that Bernie Sanders is thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
But, we could sit around and wait for that to happen. Or we could work on ways to encourage people to think outside the box and also provide them with ways to manage in a more livable community. Not just where they are, but perhaps someplace else. And that migration, I think, is going to happen whether we help them or not. But there are places in this country where they actually need people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
there are whole economic sectors in this country that are looking for talent.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking for people. There's a rather large mismatch between supply and demand in the labor market right now.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not going to get any better anytime soon because we keep, we're pulling the plug on public education. We're pulling the plug on community colleges mm-hmm. and we've decided we're not going to fund anything.
Right. Right.
Which means, sorry guys.
No, this is depressing all of a sudden. We got to fight this. I mean, we've got to fight this lack of investment.
And this, I don't mean to get all meta on your ass, Bluegal.
No, that's okay.
But, for example, we should be working right now on an all-out, flat-out program of geothermal, solar, wind energy, mm-hmm. tidal, everything.
Mm-hmm.
We should be tapping the crap out of every erg of clean energy we can lay our hands on and spending like the devil to make that happen. If we need to burn fossil fuels for 3 more years or 5 more years to get there
mm-hmm. –
and that's the plan? Okay. All right.
But you're talking about NASA-style investment.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a
exactly.
race to get off of foreign – it's not just a goal out there someplace.
No.
We're now in a race, and we're going to do it in 7 years. Boom. That's it.
And
that's our deadline.
Exactly. Yeah. And we're going to change the way we drive, the way we do public transit. Mm-hmm. We're going to do all of these things around a – and here's the timeline.
And every house builder, every manufacturer in New England is going to be spent converting heating systems at government expense away from heating oil to something else.
And it's going to cost
a lot of money.
There are very well-insulated houses in the world that are powered by, as Tom Hartman, are powered by a single candle during cold. Mm-hmm. The degree to which technology can serve us now in mm-hmm. this area mm-hmm. is quite amazing.
Yeah.
But we're not going to get there tomorrow.
Yeah. And we're not going to get there without a shitload of money.
Right. And this fantasy that we're going to become a green, agrarian, clean economy with full employment for everyone,
mm-hmm.
in the next 5 years or 10 years is a fantasy. That's never going to happen. So if that's your goal and anything short of that is a miserable failure, you're doomed to disappointment. Remember during the Bush administration, we kept saying it's going to take a generation to clean this shit up. Well, guess what? It's going to take a generation to clean this shit up.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of shit to be cleaned up. But that's where we start making trade-offs. The problem is you have to have an agreement that getting a massive investment in green energy and putting up solar panels and geothermal and tidal and everything else is the plan.
Yeah, yeah.
And not, okay, oh, so you're going to let me, you know, you're going to let me stay on crack for another 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll just do nothing for 5 years and
then I'll
around.
Do drill, baby, drill. Right.
And then I'll do drill, baby, drill because I want to keep my SUV.
Yep.
No. And the problem that we have when you look down – and every one of our social problems is sort of this way in one way or another. There's a price to be paid for the long-term progress we want to make. The price of getting a really good educational system is, A, giving up the fantasy that we can have an agrarian-based school calendar, that we can pay teachers crap wages and treat them like shit and expect them to solve all of our problems,
mm-hmm.
that we can have single-parent families who are working three jobs and are actively involved in their children's school enough that it will make up for the gap that a missing parent causes, mm-hmm. and. You know, everybody knows what the problems are.
Yeah.
The solution is a lot of money and getting rid of some bad teachers and changing some rules and changing some school days. But it's going to cost more, period. It'll cost more to have a better educated public. It will cost more to have a clean energy economy. It will cost more to have – to save the manufacturing base, which I personally think is a terribly important thing to do. All those things are doable. All those – and it'll cost more in the short run to get a rational healthcare system. It will cost more in the short run to get – to restructure our pension and old age planning system so that people can live out their old age in dignity with decent healthcare. All of those things are very doable. The problem is every time we look down one of these tunnels, we see the GOP staring back at us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Saying, oh, no, you're not even going to get close to this. Fuck that. All that – everything you just described is rank evil socialism, and we're going to fight you every fucking inch of the way. You're not even going to get close to any of that. You know, you try to plan for an energy-efficient future in any way. Try to link the word industrial and planning together.
Yeah, and we will kill you. Yeah.
It's communism, and we will run through the streets screaming, dirty, dirty commie.
Yep.
And 20 million of our, you know, boob followers will agree with us.
Yeah.
And take us right off the cliff. We have a much more immediate problem in that we have a political party in this country that has to be eliminated
mm-hmm.
before we can make any progress.
Yeah.
And that is the conversation I wish my president were having. You know, if he wants to really impress the fuck out of me, you remember The Truth with Jokes, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Al Franken's book.
Which is our Bible, basically. I mean, for fighting the right, you couldn't do better, I don't think.
It's just.
You couldn't do better than The Truth with Jokes. Everyone should read that book. And Al Franken reads it on the audiobook. If you're interested in a good audio read that'll take you a couple days, that's a good one.
But he takes us to the below the floor of the Democratic Convention in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, the GOP was clearly just sharpening its knives for John Kerry.
Yeah.
You know, you had the Swift Boat liars out there, and he really just eviscerates them. He goes through every detail and destroys them. But it's clear that the GOP has been laying in wait for John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
But they've made him out to be, you know, everyone knows what happened in the Kerry campaign. You know, affable block of wood, John Kerry. Thought he could, you know, salute and play soldier and be an honorable man and not get killed. But what was happening below the convention floor was the script writers, the speech writers were being told by the Democratic Party, by Democratic Party leaders, to take out references to Republican and put in references to some in Washington.
Oh, wow.
Because we don't want to identify, you know, the fact that the other party is the problem. The Republicans are meanwhile marching in circles and saying Democrats are traitors. They must die. Those fuckers must die.
Yeah.
And John Kerry is trying to be nice.
Yeah.
And that's what drove us crazy about Kerry is he was really fucking that fucking stupid.
This is when race gets in the way for Obama, though.
Well,
is the minute he's mad.
I don't buy that anymore. I'm sorry.
You don't? Well, tell me why not.
No, because it doesn't matter what he does.
Well, that's true.
He has been, you know, butter wouldn't melt in his mouth the last 3 years. Yep. He has given the psychopaths on the right everything they've asked for. Mm-hmm. And they are gunning for him as if he were, you know.
Yeah, the Kenyan usurper socialist. Yeah.
So it literally doesn't matter what he does. There's no limit to their anger and there's no limit to their psychosis.
So what you're saying is if he's doing the time, he should do the crime.
Yes.
Okay, I cracked myself up. Sue me.
And you're goddamn right you should.
Yeah.
So I want, you know, but I have heard him in the last 2 weeks say, you know, the limit of his capacity to be angry is to say, some in Washington have prevented me.
And some in Washington have frustrated me. I am frustrated just like you
are. Some in Washington.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute, that's verbatim. And the speechwriters were asking themselves, you know, gee, I hope we didn't fuck up because, you know, it certainly seems like one team came with bottles and chainsaws.
Yeah, it's knife to a gunfight. It really is. Yeah. Yeah.
And the other one decided to put the frilly shirt on and fight in Marquita Queensberry rules and got killed. Yeah. All right. What did we learn from this?
Yeah.
Did the Republican Party get any nicer since 2004? Any more rational? Any more reasonable? No. They're a rabid dog that needs to be put down like a rabid dog. And Barack Obama keeps coming to the table pretending that they're not.
Yep.
And that's why I really want someone. All the Jennifers out there, Barack Obama is going to be going around to the country, you know, on his bus tour, on his campaign tour, et cetera, over the next year. Because he's not running, you know, the election isn't tomorrow. There's still time. I really want somebody at a public event to stand up and say, Mr. President, I love you and am grateful for you and think you're awesome and I followed your career and, you know, you really seem like a really smart guy. So I got to ask you, what the fuck is your problem? You know who could have told you that the GOP was going to do this to you? Every fucking liberal in the country. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew this was coming. Everybody knew they were crazy. Everybody knew they were nuts. Everybody who has paid any attention to politics for the last 30 years knows the GOP is out of their fucking mind. Even members of the GOP who got kicked out of the party are now willing to admit, yeah, we were right. They're fucking crazy. They're just a bunch of nut jobs. They're willing to burn the country down just to make you mad. Just to piss liberals off. That's how fucking crazy they are. And the only person in the entire Democratic Party who didn't seem to realize that was the guy we elected president. And as many times as he's been punched in the head by these guys, it still doesn't seem to be sinking in. So I'm at a loss to understand
how – Well, it seems to me Howard Dean and John Kerry could both tell him that.
Well, I'm sure they have.
You know? And I don't know why it's not getting through.
Well, I would like – and this is why I'd like a little – and this, I mean this in the nicest possible way. A little friendly fire.
Yeah.
I would like someone at a town meeting or a town hall or a public address or one of those venues where friendly –
What is your
like,
problem that you can't get angry and call these – and you don't have to swear.
Yeah, you do.
I want your question to be non-bleeped on the NBC Nightly News. Hmm? So, what is your problem?
You know what this reminds me of, Blue Gal?
What?
It reminds me of That 70s Show.
Yeah, well, one of your favorite scenes in That 70s Show.
Absolutely my favorite
We've talked
scene.
About it many, many times, but go ahead and relate it to people.
It's Red Foreman, you know, the hard-ass conservative, you know, boot
He's
in your
dad.
Ass.
Dad.
He's the dad.
Yeah.
Who killed men in Korea.
Yeah, it reminds everybody constantly. He killed men in Korea.
Yeah. Who's just a badass. He's just a hard ass. Everybody knew Red Foreman when you were growing up. It wasn't your dad. He was your friend's dad. And Red was a rock solid Republican who believed the government should be able to do anything it wanted to do. You know, remember, this isn't a time when Republicans trusted, you know, had trusted Nixon.
Yeah.
You know, and if the government tells you we're going to put a probe up your ass, and by God, we're going to probe your ass, and you'll say, and you'll salute and say thank you.
Yeah.
You know, it was very authoritarian and very pro-government authoritarian. All these people are now Tea Partiers or dead. So, yeah. But Red Foreman was asked by the local Republican Party to ask the question. Jerry Ford was coming to town. The whole thing is shot in Wisconsin. So Jerry Ford is coming to town, and the local Republican group is gonna you know, welcome him there, and someone's gonna ask him a question.
And they chose Red because he's the Red. Loyal. He's Mr. Red State. Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Loyal.
Mr. Nixon. Yeah, yeah.
And his son asked Jerry Ford a question, and his son knows the question that's been bothering him, and Red sort of let him down at the thing. It looks like he wasn't going to ask Jerry the hard question. So his son streaks the event.
Wow. Yeah.
Which was, you know, something we all did, Blue Gal.
No, I didn't. I was too young to streak.
Well, you missed it.
I missed it.
It was a big thing for some reason, running around naked in the middle of the night, hoping your clothes were still there when you got back. But he finally got his dad. His dad finally sort of broke the spell, and he got his dad to ask the question, which was, Jerry, how the hell could you have pardoned Nixon? And somebody needs, some friendly person, some Democrat, some good Democrat.
Really loyal person. Democrat, yeah.
Look, he used to stand up and ask Barack Obama, Barack, how the hell can you keep selling out my values to these monsters, mm-hmm. to these sociopaths? Why the hell can't you see what's obvious to any averagely bright 8-year-old in this audience, that the Republican Party hates you, hates us, and will not be satisfied until we are dead and buried in the ground? Who would rather destroy this country to hurt you?
Yep.
Than
on no other principle than that.
Anything.
Yep. Under no other principle than just that.
It's,
yep.
It's fun to fuck with the black guy in the White House. How the hell?
And make liberals mad.
Where do you get off? Selling my, handing over my precious values, mm-hmm. things that I believe in, and the things that I elected you to fight for. How the hell do you keep offering it up to them on an altar, and it's never enough to satisfy them because they're crazy? What's wrong with you that you don't see that? What's your malfunction?
That's a good question.
I would like to see a Democrat ask that question. Mm-hmm. I really would, because it's not an adversarial question. It's legitimate.
Yeah.
Up front. Yeah. Clear question that every
and it's spoken with a broken heart, you know, not in it, like you said, not with any animosity, but just with a broken heart. I stand before you with a broken heart. How can you sell our values out in the name of compromise?
And this is the for those of you who might recognize it, this is the central question of every alcoholic family.
Yeah,
you know, it's. There's the terrible question that you're never allowed to talk about at the center of the alcoholic family. And the terrible question that we are not allowed to talk about at the heart of our democracy is that one of our major political parties is psychotic and run by evil people. And mommy, you know, our mainstream media is mommy who pretends that never happened. Let's all have pancakes.
Yeah.
And like, no, we're the annoying kid who says, no, let's talk about what the hell happened last night.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah, why is your eye black, mommy? Yeah. I'm making pancakes. Everything's fine now. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we've already done that. We did that for 8 years under Bush.
Yep.
We don't need to do that anymore. And the fact that you keep doing that really scares the shit out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
I think that's a good place to end. But yeah.
The upside is that I think our problems are, you know, our problems are fixable.
Yeah.
The downside is we have to agree to fix them.
And we, on the left, as I said last week, are the minority that has to take the lead. And perhaps we'll get the opportunity to do that in a question and answer period with the President of the United States.
You know, I don't believe that, you know, the one Hail Mary moment.
No.
But you know what? When Joe, the fake plumber who's not a plumber and isn't named Joe, mm-hmm. stuck his hand out and started reaming out Barack Obama, that did change things.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, not for the better, but, you know, those moments along the campaign trail really do sort of.
All of the times that Michelle Bachmann has opened her mouth in the past 7 days over the hurricane has been just awful for her campaign. And you know, there's very few Republicans that even want to have anything to do with her, because what she's saying is really anti-Dominion. So she's making jokes about God and what God can do, and then saying it's just a joke. No, that's really not helping you with your base when you're supposed to be the holier-than-thou one, you know. And I do want to just make one comment about the hurricane, because if there's one thing that hurricane washed away, it's the illusion that the press is anything except a completely myopic New York City-centered wankers. I mean,
circle jerk, I would say.
Wanking. Yeah. Well, it was a rainstorm here, so it didn't mean anything, and we just hyped it.
Right.
And paying no attention. It didn't. Not. It skipped everybody because it skipped us. That was the point.
That's the point.
Howie Kurtz said, how embarrassed can you be? You know, the apocalypse that cable television had been trumping failed to materialize. You know, it just failed. You know, tell that to the 44 people who died. You know, it just.
And all the people in all the little towns
that are flooded and out of power still today.
Howie Kurtz can get from Starbucks to his office. Therefore, there was no apocalypse.
Right. Right.
You know,
and he's the media. The media expert for CNN.
Which is why we, you know, this town needs an enema. Blue
it
gal.
Needs an enema. This town needs an enema. Absolutely. Huh? On that note. This town needs an enema. I might actually title the podcast that. We're so glad you're listening. We have a website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can listen to us and our archives, all 91 episodes, for free, with no download and no registration. We have a Facebook page linked at our website, and if you like us on Facebook, go ahead and like me too, or try to friend me. My name is Francis Langham on Facebook, and I will friend you back. We're on iTunes. We love our iTunes listeners. Thank you for all the kind comments you've left over on iTunes about our podcast on the iTunes store page. We really appreciate that. And a special shout out to our Crooks and Liars listeners. You guys are listening on Crooks and Liars Saturday nights at Open Thread, and we really appreciate you and your kind comments as well. I understand, Driftglass, I've heard from someone at something called Netroots Radio that they're going to be running our podcast Sunday nights, I believe from 7 to 8. I'll have to check on that. But it's Netroots Radio. Let me check. Hold on. I'm going to give a website on that. Yes, netrootsradio.blogspot.com. Apparently, they're going to be running our podcast Sunday nights.
Every week, Blue Gal?
I think so. I'm pretty sure. Sunday, 7 to 8 p.m. That is Pacific time. So that means 8, 9, 10 to 11 on Eastern time. They're going to be running our podcast. So, what I heard was they're going to be running it at the hour, and then so at 10 p.m. Eastern, and then fill in with music at the end if we're not a full hour. So consistently we'll be on Sunday nights on netrootsradio.blogspot.com. So thank you, guys. Function of Daily Coast. Those guys are connected to Daily Coast, and they're doing all kinds of liberal radio over there, so you might want to check them out.
And that came out of
nothing.
The blue
that
sky,
came out of that
right?
came that came out of them listening, finding us, and saying, "Oh, these guys are good. Let's put them on our website." Okay, thanks. We appreciate it. Well, I think having 91 episodes in a row, they realized these guys are going to be around for a while. So there is something to that. As I've said before, if you want to know how to win at podcasting, first blog for 6 years for no money.
Step one.
Then they know you're crazy. Then they know you're crazy.
Two,
yeah.
Pick up a microphone.
Yeah, and then pick up a microphone and have a husband/partner who has a voice that's... you have a radio voice. Let's put it that way. Can I say that? A voice for radio?
Thank you, Blue Gal.
Yeah, right, I know. I loved it when my dad begged you to talk to my mom as Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
That was kind of funny.
That was kind of cute.
You can contribute to our podcast. And Driftglass, we have new notepads that you haven't even seen yet. I just picked them up yesterday, and they are a little bit different than the old notepads. They say, "The Professional Left Podcast with Driftglass and Blue Gal, liberal bloggers lively talk on iTunes and at professionalleft.blogspot.com." And if you send us $15 or more, we will snail mail you. These just got picked up yesterday afternoon, but previously I've been sending our old Netroots Nation notepads, and I actually sent two this week, one to Western Australia and one to Finland. So I wanted to, I realized that we haven't done a shout out to our expat and overseas listeners for a while.
We have a rather startlingly large number.
There's a very high percentage of those listeners that we hear from. We get a lot of great emails from them. And I wanted to let you know that, yes, you guys get notepads too. And it really doesn't cost us that much to mail one overseas. So don't think that you're left out. We're delighted to bump up the postage just a little bit and include you in our thank you.
And so contribute now before the United States Postal Service implodes.
There you go. Now there's a question. Are they going to close a post office here in the corn country? That might happen.
So again, if you contribute $15 or more at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, we will be happy to snail mail you a notepad.
We heard from one of our regular contributors, someone who's contributed to our blogs before many times as well. He's a really great guy. And this week he sent some money and said, "Hey, I paid you guys before my mortgage, but it's Bank of America." So, well, I would do that too then. His mortgage is with Bank of America, so...
Yeah, screw them.
There you go. We totally understand.
Mm-hmm. Pay them in magic beans. We're both tired. It's a Wednesday night.
It is. It's late. So, yes, we'd love hearing from our overseas and expat listeners and those of you closer to home. We are at proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Feel free to write to us. That email address goes to both of us. Be aware that if you write us at that address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise.
So, Blue Gal, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Hey, the Internet Kitties are off this week, and we're filling in as Michael Smirkanish.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dubbing. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2011, Drip Glass Blue Gal Podcast.
You know what reminds me, Blue Gal? The time I was at Bob Chin's restaurant having a hurricane. I got really drunk and threw up in my salad.
Ouch!
Ouch! I love you. By the way, before we do this thing, mm-hmm. before we jump out of this plane,
yeah,
just hold your hand and say, I love you.
Before we jump out of this plane, that's a good.
Before we jump out of this fucking podcast plane, thin air.
Well, I love you too. Did you see the tweet that somebody had about, well, now that you've got all that dumb wedding out of the way, you can get ready for episode 100?
Yes.
And I said, episode 100 is going to have way more bling than our wedding.
Uh-huh.